Hashtag SFM Talking Point.
Well, let's get straight into our second conversation for the day. Brett Herron, good morning. Thank you so much for making time to be part of this conversation today.
Good morning, Cathy. Thank you.
So let's reflect a little bit on the Good Party, formed in 2018, December. So this makes you what, a 5-6-year-old party now?
Yeah, we were registered as a political party by the IEC on the 13th of February 2019, so just 3 months before the May 2019 election. So yeah, you can say we are 5 years old.
5 years old. And in that time, of course, some of your fortunes in 2019, you managed to secure 2 seats in Parliament. Do you think that came as a surprise because of how late in the day you contested the election and you didn't really have time to sort of establish yourselves across the country? And it came off the back of course, your leader, Patricia de Lille, coming out of the DA. So there was a little bit of that spillover effect.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it was probably a surprise to many political analysts, but obviously we wouldn't have embarked on that journey without some confidence that we would get elected. You know, the 2024 ballot is very crowded. The 2019 was more crowded than the previous one. There were 14 new parties contesting that 2019 election. We were one of those 14 new parties, and only 2 of the new parties got seats, ourselves and the ATM. So we did well, considering that we had little time, little resources. And I think you're correct. There was some benefit, some sort of tailwind that gave us some benefit arising out of the fallout that had happened between us and the DA.
Let's talk about what you believe made you stand out in that election.
I think look, the fallout with the DA in the Western Cape was around spatial justice. And so I think maybe for the first time in South African politics, there was a political party that was talking about the unfinished business from the apartheid and colonial era, which spatially segregated South Africans according to race. South Africa is still largely spatially segregated. And all of the implications of that spatial injustice or spatial segregation, because although it's physically, spatially, we're segregated, the impacts are economic and social. And so we were perhaps out of the starting block, a party that was focusing on something that maybe others hadn't focused on before, and raising voices for those people who are affected by that, the neglect to address that.
So you then have the opportunity of being in Parliament, and you are now, of course, towards the end of completing that first term. How would you describe what this term has been about, specifically for you as a party?
Well, I think the term has been an interesting term. First of all, unexpectedly, Patricia de Lille, our leader, was asked to be a member of the cabinet. Which, as you know, is a tradition of the cabinets since 1994, that a leader of an opposition party is asked to serve in that cabinet. And so she was asked to serve in public works and infrastructure, where after championing the cause of public land being used for public good, our leader was suddenly the custodian of public land at national government level. And so that was an interesting development and an opportunity for us and for her to show that what it means to use public land for public good. And the record is for everyone to see. I mean, she released more public land for land reform purposes in the 2 or 3 years that she was in that portfolio than had been released in the previous 5 parliaments. But in the parliament itself, we've been an outside voice, an outsized voice, I think, for social justice issues, championing things like the basic income grant, to the point where the Minister of Social Development recently said to us, or conceded to us, that she agreed that we needed a basic income in South Africa And it was no longer a question of whether we needed it, but how to implement it. So we've had some impact for a small party, both in Patricia being in the cabinet and in us using the parliamentary platform to champion social justice issues.
Mm. Now that you have the opportunity of reflecting back on the 5 years, and in particular this move to actually invite her into the cabinet by President Ramaphosa, do you think it was a good move to agree to be part of the Ramaphosa administration in that way?
I think it was. I mean, I understand the politics that other parties make of it. It's interesting because, as I say, we had the Freedom Front Plus serving in the Zuma administration. We had the IFP serving in both the Mandela administration and then the first Mbeki administration. And during those terms of office, there were some pretty hair-raising scandals that those governments were embroiled in. It has been some politicking around Patricia being in the cabinet with the attempt to say that, good is in an alliance with the ANC. But it is a tradition. And I think that Patricia stepped up to serve her country and to demonstrate how a government department can be run when it's run by capable, ethical leaders. And she was serving in the country and not the ANC. But obviously the impact for us is that to some degree, a lot of her time was taken up with ministerial work, and she had to really carve out time for party work. So there was a trade-off for us as a new party, but certainly she I think demonstrated what a difference political leadership can make in delivery by a government department.
And part of the criticism, right, has not just been limited, Brett, to perhaps views that good parties in alliance with the ANC, but also just a perception. Patricia de Lille has carved out her name in this country as a veteran politician, of being a firebrand. So if there's anybody that is vocal about wrongdoing at a state level, regardless of who it involves or affects, Patricia de Lille has very much been at the forefront of some of those matters. Of course, one doesn't want to labor the point, but there's so many examples that one can list. And to the extent that is part of the expectation of her as an individual versus where things are, has taking on the position of being a minister in many ways sort of, and the word is not silenced, it's certainly not the word, but perhaps less vocal, less critical on what is happening in the state, because now one is part of the state.
No, I think if you look at her record as a minister, you'll see that same commitment to a clean state that is that, as I said, is run ethically and with capable leadership. So she's sort of walked the talk and been given the opportunity to walk her talk as a corruption buster, as a firebrand, as someone you can rely on to call out corruption. Public works and infrastructure was probably the most corrupt department in government. And she went in there and cleaned up. That was the department that entered into illegal leases. We can go back 10, 20 years, the SAPS head office leases. It was the department that was inflating the costs of official funerals. I mean, it was the department that that was rife with corruption that built in Kandla. So she went in there and cleaned up. She brought in the SIU, and they were in that department sussing out the crooks. She gazetted rates for construction costs so that the padding of construction costs could no longer be used as a kind of commission or payment to corrupt officials. Although There's a lot of political criticism around the Bate Bridge story. I mean, actually, she did what an ethical, capable political leader should do. Soon as she heard that the Bate Bridge fence had been a fiasco, she again brought in the SIU. The officials that awarded that tender were placed on suspension without pay, and the SIU went to court and got the contractor to repay the funds to the taxpayer. So she, in public works and infrastructure, she really cleaned up. And when she was moved to tourism, she arrived at tourism just as the Tottenham Hotspur's 1 billion rand sponsorship deal was on the table. And within 2 weeks, she had dissolved the board, the South African Tourism Board, and cancelled that contract, and so saved South Africa another 1 billion rand, of which how much we don't know would have gone to whoever the middleman dealer was in this scheme. So I think that she took her firebrand and her corruption-busting reputation and put it into action in departments and saved South Africa a lot of money.
Although, Brett, I hear what you're saying about what happened with that fence in Zimbabwe, along our border with Zimbabwe, right? But the reality is that she's never really been able to shrug that off. It very much remains a controversy that happened under her watch.
I think it remains a controversy under her watch because people don't pay attention to detail, and I think the media doesn't help either, because the media often repeats the criticism that, for example, the Democratic Alliance will use, which is dishonest. So, if you look at the facts, I mean, first of all, a political leader should not be involved in awarding tenders. So she's not responsible for awarding that tender, because she was not involved. But when the quality of the fence became well known, she did what a political leader must do, which is to bring about proceedings to deal with the corrupt officials who awarded this tender. So I think the criticism is unfair, although I do understand how it's generated. And it's unfair because people don't actually pay attention to the facts. I mean, the facts are that the Department of Defense designs the specs for that fence, and the Department of Public Works issues the tender to have it erected. So the specifications for that fence was designed by a different department with a different minister. But when the fence was erected, and it was obviously not a real border fence, she intervened, and actually the contractor that entered into this corrupt deal with members of her department had to pay back the money. So I wish people would pay more attention to the facts.
Brett, on her time in the tourism department, of course, and you by now would have seen a lot of the reports, there does seem to be some division in the tourism sector about whether or not her presence as minister there has been beneficial for the sector. So you've got those on the one hand who say that she has largely overseen what is a decline in the state of the sector due to lack of interventions by the Department of Tourism. And of course, subsequently, there are those in the sector who've come out to defend her in many respects. But what it does, and you mentioned the point earlier, is that ultimately she's found herself having to divide her time between being minister but also having to fulfill party obligations. Does this then become the position that the party finds itself in? Because, of course, you're constantly going to be questioned about what your leader is doing in her portfolio in cabinet and held accountable to it.
Well, I think I'm not aware of the sector, the parts of the tourism sector who suggest that she's responsible for a decline in the sector. All I'm hearing, and this is, you know, anecdotal really from organizations and people in the tourism sector, is that how impressed they are with the work that she's done as tourism minister. And I keep hearing that there are many in the tourism sector who are lobbying the president to reappoint her as that minister of tourism if the ANC and he is re-elected as president, and if we are elected into government, into parliament. So what I'm hearing is that the sector is largely very, very excited and very satisfied with the role that she's played as tourism minister. I think the obvious, on the question around the politics is that all ministers and the president himself are also political leaders. So they all have to divide their time between doing their cabinet work and doing their political work. So it's not unique to her. It's unique to us as a good party because it happened. I mean, we were 4 months old or 5 months old when she was asked to serve in the cabinet straight after the elections. And so for us, we were a brand new party establishing ourselves, and our leader was in straight into cabinet. So maybe a little different for us because we were still building our institutions and our structures. But I think that her role in cabinet, for those who view her performance objectively and not through political lenses, will be very satisfied and be very encouraged that actually political leadership does make a difference. I raised it earlier that the level of scrutiny that Patricia's enjoyed as a minister doesn't seem to have been applied to other ministers. I mean, the late Prince Buthelezi was the Minister of Home Affairs for two terms, and Home Affairs is a department that many South Africans lament the quality of service. Does the IFP get the same sort of criticism for his failure to turn around Home Affairs? I don't hear it.
Okay. We're in conversation with Brett Heron. When we come back then, we take a look at the party, and this is in terms of its prospects in this election. Of course, you know, on the one hand, while we've been dealing with just what the reflections are over the last term, there's, of course, what has been happening at a local level and indications of whether the party is growing and, most importantly, not growing. Brett Heron is the Good Party Secretary General. He's our guest for this hour. It's 10:30. Time for your latest news headline.
The Talking Point with Kathy Motlatlana. Weekdays, 9 a.m. till midday.
We're in conversation with Brett Heron. He is with the Good Party. We're talking about the party's plans going into this election and what it is really that they're offering to voters. So, Brett, let's take a look then at what you've been able to do on a party level over the last 5 years. Do you think you've grown as a party, and what measure would you use for that?
Yeah, I think we have grown, Kathy. As I say, I mean, as we said at the beginning of the show, we launched in early 2019, and we contested the elections as a new party in May 2019, and we secured 2 seats in the National Assembly and 1 in the Western Cape Provincial Parliament. Then we've started preparing for the 2021 local government elections, and we contested in only 44 municipalities around the country in 4 provinces or 5 provinces. We managed to secure or grow to 50 councillors. We are now represented in 4 provinces. We have councillors in the Northern Cape, in Gauteng, the Eastern Cape, and obviously the Western Cape. So we use that as a measurement of growth. Between 2019 and 2024, we've contested in about 20 by-elections. And we've shown growth in all of those by-elections except for 2. And then we had a terrible loss in George, where we lost 3 wards that we had won. But we contested a by-election almost 2 months after that, in Tirwaterskloof, a municipality in the Western Cape, where again we showed substantial growth, bringing the DA. It was a DA ward. They had won it outright in 2021 with 52% of the vote, and their support fell from 52% to 28%, and we lost that election by 44 votes. So we've seen growth from 2019 to 2021. We're now represented. We have public representatives in 4 provinces. And we expect to show growth in 2024.
So, how many wards do you have currently as the Good Party?
We don't represent any. We did have three wards in George. The three councillors in those wards resigned to join the DA. Then they tried to come back to Good, but the electoral court wouldn't allow them to change their minds. So we had to contest those elections, and we lost those by-elections, unfortunately. So we lost the three wards that we did have. But we have re-established ourselves. We reorganized our garden route infrastructure, which is those wards were in the George municipality. And so I think we've recovered from that setback.
And that happened last year, right? And part of the reason why I'm sort of staying with it, Brett, is because when we look for obvious signs, at least I'm thinking from a party perspective, they say, okay, well, this is not a good indicator. A party losing a ward is one of It's one of those signs of what is happening organizationally. Why is it that these voters that had outright given this party this ward previously are changing their minds? And it could well also be seen as indicating some form of regression for the organization. So where do you think things went wrong with those particular wards and what it is that the Good Party has taken from that.
So I think where it went wrong in George was in the reappointment of one of our members, one of our councillors who resigned, and then, as I say, all three of we had three resign. They all three wanted to come back, begged us to take them back, and we went to the electoral court to challenge whether their resignations had been lawfully processed. And then we reappointed one of them back to be the campaign manager for that election. And quite frankly, they stole our funds. So the funding that we were putting into those wards has been was stolen. We're suing that former member. We've laid criminal charges. So it was a unique and unusual and quite horrifying experience to have that level of trust broken. So I don't see that the loss in George as an indicator of regression, because I think we were sabotaged by someone who was dishonest. What I think we wh why we are confident that we're growing is because we look at the sum total of all of the by-elections that we've contested. I mean, also, last year we contested a by-election in Inyanga, and the ANC is actually the ANC's strongest ward in the city of Cape Town. And we came second in that ward, taking 20% of the vote, which frightened the ANC. They were running around on election day handing out food parcels when they saw how well we were doing. So I think we need to look at the full total picture when we look at by-election results and understand that what happened in George was a unique anomaly with some unique and never to be repeated errors. But we contest by-elections for three reasons: either to defend a ward that you've already won, to try and win a ward where you think you can win, and we, as I indicated, 2 3 months ago, we lost to the DA by 44 votes, which is luck, not really an indication of our lack of support. Or you contest in a ward where you have absolutely no support in order to establish yourself in that ward and to find activists who will help you in the next election. And we've approached by-elections on all three bases and achieved the results mostly that we would like to achieve.
Is the ANC an obvious choice for the Good Party when it comes to a potential alliance coalition partner member? You're already with in coalition with the ANC at a local level. You've mentioned one of the wards where the ANC is in coalition with Good Party. But if we're to take that and bring it to a national level.
I think we adopted a policy at our national conference in November 2023, which will guide how we will deal with coalitions post the elections. And we are currently in coalition with the ANC and the Patriotic Alliance in Tiobardus Kloof, which is where we nearly won that that ward, which I would say is an indication that the voters are quite happy with the way that we're governing. Our coalition policy that was approved by our national conference, which is our highest decision-making body, empowers the national leadership to engage with political parties after the elections and based on our values, our policies, and a governing agreement. So I wouldn't say that there is no party that we've identified that we will coalition with, and there's no party that we've identified that we won't coalition with. I mean, in the last few years since the local government elections, we have been in coalition with the ANC and the Patriotic Alliance in Tiobardus Kloof, but we've also been in coalition with the DA in Witzenberg, and we were part of the change in government in Nelson Mandela Bay when we switched from being in coalition with the ANC to joining the DA-led coalition when that change happened. So we will consider local conditions when it's local elections, and at national government level or provincial government level, we will consider a governing plan that we can reach agreement on with potential coalition partners.
Of course, when we think about what goes into these coalitions, and we know that sort of those that are part of the Moonshot Pact have already been talking about how they are processing even just the concept of who goes where, who becomes the deputy president, who becomes the president potentially. Those are conversations that we're having. So because you already have a leader who's part of the cabinet, in making that decision about whether or not you enter into coalition, surely that will be a factor that you consider. Or does it not matter to you if you have a representative that is that comes back into cabinet? Yes, it's not a decision in your hands if the ANC gets an outright majority, but would you want to see that happen? So would you want yourself, or would you want Patricia de Lille to still be part of cabinet?
I think Patricia would say herself, and I'll speak for her because she's not here, but that she never sought that position and she never expected it. It's entirely the president's prerogative to appoint his cabinet. And when she was asked to serve, she agreed to serve her country and not to serve the ANC. So for us, it's not about whether we can get a position. And it's interesting because that's the problem with many coalitions, is exactly what you're talking about in the Moonshot Pact, how they are negotiating around positions. We are interested in negotiating a governing agreement. So what will this government of this coalition government that we would be part of, what would we do in the 5-year term of office? And what parts of our manifesto and our policies and our values will be reflected in that governing agreement? So we're not chasing any positions in cabinet or anywhere else. We will engage if it's necessary anywhere in the country, in any province or at a national level, with other parties around a coalition, if no party achieves a absolute majority in any province where we're contesting or at national level. But our engagement will be around what is going to be our governing plan for the 5 years, how will we implement it, and then we can ask who will implement it.
So then, Brett, what then becomes your value proposition for South Africans? What is your value proposition for South Africans?
Our value proposition is a voice for the voiceless, as we have been, for those who've been neglected, for the unfinished business from apartheid that people don't want to talk about or recognize, that the impacts, the socioeconomic impacts of pre-1994, the decades and the centuries, really, pre-1994 impacts, are still felt by the vast majority of South Africans today, who are suffering, And as you'll see on our posters and our message is, we can end the suffering. And our value proposition is to encourage voters to change their vote in order to say that we want the suffering to end, that the suffering of people, 55% of our population lives in poverty, the suffering is not normal. We should not accept it as normal. It should not be acceptable to any South African, whether you have means or whether you live in those conditions. You should not accept it as a normal way of existing. So we have a unique offering which recognizes that South Africa is fundamentally a different country to what it was in 1994, but that the vast majority of people have not tasted the fruits of that democracy, and we will fight to them for them until the bitter end, as we have been doing over the last 5 years, to the point where hopefully we've now convinced national government that a basic income system or a basic income grant is absolutely necessary, not only a constitutional imperative, but is necessary to mitigate starvation that millions of South Africans experience every day.
I want to go to the phone lines and bring in some of our listeners. I'm going to kick it off in the Western Cape. Anonymous, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Interesting show, but I'd like to ask why Madam DeLille did not insure Parliament. She forgot to insure Parliament. And now it's costing the taxpayer, they said $1.5 billion, but it's skyrocketed to $3 to $4 billion. And I heard 4 people were arrested for this, but we've heard nothing since. And I want to know what the excuse of Madam DeLille is for not insuring Parliament.
Is this in line with the fire? Is this in line with the fire at Parliament, Anonymous?
The fire that burnt Parliament with that guy something Christmas who burnt it down.
Okay, all right, Anonymous. Thanks for the question. Mike, you're out in Newlands. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Cathy. Good morning, Brett. My 2 quick questions are, first of all, I'm not understanding how you justify the fact that Mr. Lowe is part of the ANC. I mean, I don't think you'll disagree with me when I say the ANC is not a political party. You can't the situation we're in now to what we were 10 years ago when the last he served.
Mike, unfortunately, the line to you isn't great. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to call you back. Mike, we'll call you back. Don't worry. Let me go to Mawande in the Eastern Cape. Mawande, good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. Only 2 quick questions. One, ma'am, to my conclusion, I would say good party is like the branch of the ANC. I would mention my reasons why. Firstly, on the can the leader there mention 2 instances in Parliament whereby they were decisive and voting against the ANC or either reporting them to the law enforcement agencies to show that they are not the branch of the ANC? Then the second issue is in regard to Palapala. In Palapala, they abstain in regard to that report. Do they disagree with those legal scholars like Sandland or whatever, the former Chief Justice, who said there is a case against Cyril Ramaphosa to answer? If he disagrees with that, what are their reasons for disagreeing with that? Thank you.
Mawande, thanks for those precise questions. Britt, I'll give you an opportunity to respond. We're going to take a quick break.
I'm Sindisiwe Chikunga, the Minister of Transport in South Africa. Fellow South Africans, our nation is not where it was 30 years ago. Our bus rapid transport system from Rea Vaya to my city offers affordable commute for work and learning. Our regulated airports and airspace infrastructure through which millions of international passengers travel is world-class. In aviation, maritime, road and rail, we have produced pilots, engineers, air traffic controllers, train drivers, master mariners, and seafarers, opening doors to careers once out of reach. We have grown South Africa together, building better communities.
We continue the conversation on the Talking Point. The good part is Brett Heron is our guest. Brett, let me give you an opportunity to answer the questions by our listeners before I take in more callers.
Sure, thank you. Let me deal with them in order. I mean, the first question around the parliamentary fire, First of all, the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure is not responsible for ensuring public buildings. In fact, public buildings, including the Paula lives in the city of Cape Town. The city of Cape Town is also a self-insured for their assets. So it's not unusual in government. In fact, I think it's widespread in government, including in the city of Cape Town, where governments are what they call self-insured. So they don't take out insurance with external insurance companies. They are self-insured. But the Secretary of Parliament and the Speaker of Parliament are responsible for the parliamentary buildings, and they're responsible for the security on the buildings. They're responsible for what happened with the ease of access that the accused managed to get into the parliament and set fire to it. And they are, and the Secretary of Parliament and the Speaker of Parliament are responsible for rebuilding parliament. So I think blaming Patricia de Lille for the fire and for the building not being insured is misconstrued. I think I got Mike's question, which is that the ANC today is not the same ANC that the previous cabinets or leaders of political parties served in. And I mean, I think it's, of course, the ANC is different today. It's got a different leader and it's got a different different leadership. But you know, some of these leaders of other political parties served in cabinets when the arms deal went down, which was and Patricia de Lille, the whistleblower. But I mean, that was the start of our state capture and our corruption with impunity. So, and then we had leaders such as the Freedom Front Plus serving during the state capture years of Zuma. We had Prince Buthelezi serving when Nkandla was built. So all of these leaders have served in cabinets when the ANC government and some of its operators and some even its president have been accused of gross corruption, state capture, and maladministration. And what did those leaders do? They didn't resign from cabinet. They kept their cabinet positions and kept serving the people of South Africa, as they would argue. And then just the last caller regarding when we voted against the ANC. We voted against positions in Parliament often. We have no agreement with the ANC that we are bound to vote with them on issues. And as I say, we have no alliance agreement with the ANC. We have no coalition agreement. And Patricia de Lille serves as a member serving the people of South Africa. But two examples that spring to mind more recently, we voted against the attempt to amend the Constitution, the Section 25 amendment, not because we are opposed to expropriation, we support the expropriation bill, but because we didn't believe it was necessary to amend the Constitution to achieve expropriation with nil compensation, and also because the ANC was playing politics. They were trying to appease the EFF or mitigate the EFF in that attempted amendment. And we voted recently against the Electoral Matters Amendment Bill. So those are two examples. In committee, recently we opposed the Human Settlements White Paper, which proposes to fundamentally remove the right to housing, or diminish the right to housing. So we opposed to that.
All right.
And then on the Parler matter, if I may briefly say, when we abstained from the Parler vote, we actually proposed a solution to the Parler matter that, had it been passed, would have been in the best interest of South Africa. Because at the time, the president was taking the Parler report on review. And if we had launched an ad hoc committee to impeach him and his review was successful, all of that work would have been wasted. In adopting the position that Parliament ultimately adopted, which is to reject the Parler report, by the panel of experts, that ended the matter. What we were proposing was that the ad hoc committee be established, but that it not operate or sit until the review had been concluded. And if the president's review had failed, then the ad hoc committee would commence with its impeachment.
All right. So then, do you believe on the Palapala matter that the president has sufficiently cleared his name?
No, the president abandoned his review application, which is precisely what would happen, because Parliament voted to reject the Parler report. So there was no need for him to take it on review because it had no standing. And that was why we proposed this middle way. The most sensible, the only sensible solution was what we proposed as an amendment to the resolution, which the Speaker disallowed. And so we had to abstain because the President hasn't cleared his name, but he hasn't pursued the review because Parliament rejected the report.
Mike in Newlands, I'm squeezing you in here. Good morning.
Sure. Hi. Thanks, Kathy. Yeah, just quickly, well, of course, the Speaker of Parliament disallowed it because the ANC is not a political party any longer, Brett. You know, you can't keep going on about what happened in the past. I mean, whether the other political parties got involved with the ANC or not, I don't really care. What I do know now is that when Patricia de Lille joined the ANC, or not joined the ANC, but sorry, entered into the ANC, the den of the ANC, she's supporting essentially what's nothing more than a criminal network. We have our president stuffed dollars in his furniture. Paul Mashatile is running around with mansions all over the place, running away from all sorts of accusations. In fact, the entire NEC, Brett, lied to Parliament in South Africa about the pool story. You know, you cannot be part of that. It's a bit like deciding to set up an organization to fight gangs and gangsterism, and then joining the gangsters to tell them how to get their department sorted out. It's a complete nonsense.
All right. All right, Mike.
One final thing, Kathy.
Mike, we're completely out of time. I have to squeeze in Billy. Billy, good morning.
Ma.
Yes, Billy, quickly.
Yes, Kathy, how are you?
Quickly, Billy.
I wanted to say very well to Good Party. It is doing a good job. However, they've come down. The time we knew Patricia, she was very strong. But with this ANC now, I think she's been tamed. However, she must continue doing the good job, in particular for the colored people. You know, in this country, we had the problem of being not enough white or not being enough black. But now you must mobilize colored people and fight for their rights. And
okay.
Ensure that they are able also to get a stake out of this democracy. Thank you very much.
All right. Billy, we'll have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we're completely out of time. And I also see that our session, Brett, is about to expire. So we're going to have to leave it there. It is 11 o'clock and time for the latest news update.